Welcome to the Business Case for Women's Sports, where we explore every corner of the women's sports industry, from the field to the front office. I'm Caroline Fitzgerald, and I'm here to prove that it's good business to be in the business of women's sports. So let's get after it. Our guest today is Thayer LaVielle. Thayer is the Executive Vice President at The Collective, which is the women's division of the sports marketing and talent management company, Wasserman. Prior to leading The Collective, Thayer led talent management and operations across the company's team sports, broadcast, coaching, and women's divisions, and held the role of EVP of Corporate Growth and Development. Throughout her career, Thayer has negotiated over $250 million worth of talent, brand, property, and venue deals in the sports and entertainment world. Welcome to the show, Thayer.
Thanks for having me, Caroline.
Well, it's really great to have you here. I am personally just such a huge fan of everything that you and your team do at The Collective. So to start our conversation today, can you just talk pretty simply, basically, about what you and your team do at The Collective?
Yeah, sure. So The Collective is a group of men and women at Wasserman who basically come together to create equity, create change for equity and fairness for women in sports business, in sports as athletes, in entertainment, in culture. That's a very varied thing for us as we are a pretty big agency now, you know, all over the world with lots of different tentacles in how we do business. And so we have essentially a brand consultative business with brands and properties that spans over, you know, hundreds and hundreds of clients. And we look to do work with them in essentially their intentionality in the gender equity space. And then we have thousands of athletes and artists that we represent across the world. And many of those are women. And so we look to provide as much opportunity as we can to make them shine, make them more money, speak to the issues that they're most passionate about.
That's amazing. So how long has The Collective been a thing at Wasserman?
It was birthed 2 years ago in July. So we're 2 years old, but we have been doing this work for over 20 years. And we just eventually came around to really determining that we wanted to be and needed to be far more intentional about our work in this space and how we hold others accountable to that as well. You know, we have many different agents across our business on the talent side who work day in and day out for really pushing forward for specifically gender equity and you know, their women clients. And then on the brands and property side, we've marketed to and through women for years and years in creating better insights that drive better activations or better strategies or better partnerships, content, whatever it is. So we birthed it about 2 years ago, and we've been very busy ever since. We started a think tank a year ago, which has been really an incredible blessing to bring together 20 different universities and some of their smart professors to really talk about gender equity on a daily basis. To just today, we launched our Collective Marketplace, which is the first of its kind platform that women athletes can provide, you know, game used and collectible memorabilia direct to the fans and consumers who want to buy them, which is a big opportunity for them.
It's a huge opportunity, and I can't wait to hear more about that. We don't always have breaking news here on the podcast, and to be talking to you today is just amazing. And I know that's going to be a game changer, but we'll save that. We're going to jump into it in a little bit. A follow-up question I have for you, Thayer, is how did you personally come to do this work? Can you talk a little bit more about your professional journey that led you to now leading The Collective?
Yeah, sure. Look, I think I came pretty naturally to it in my personal life with three older brothers and two older stepbrothers. So there was kind of a natural affinity to sticking out my elbows and just demanding what was mine. And then professionally, I would say very circuitously, I never set out to work in a feminist space. I never set out to even work in sports. I really, you know, I majored in French and religion in college, which, you know, basically leaves you scratching your head after graduation. So I moved to Paris, and not being particularly religious, but really studied the kind of had those religious studies more for the history of the world and the stories they told. I was fascinated by France and French culture. So I moved over there and ended up really being able to speak the language quite fluently and got a job in the news business, basically doing anything that they asked and for ABC News. And then I eventually got asked to move back to New York and worked for them for about 5 years at World News Tonight and Good Morning America. And then I got into PR in the luxury product space. And then I went to L'Oreal for 7 years where I started in PR and then was really asked and kind of pushed into a marketing position, which I had no interest in doing candidly at the beginning, mostly because I didn't understand what was being asked of me. And and it felt like, particularly at a company like L'Oreal, very intense from a, you know, analytics perspective. And that didn't really hold a lot of interest to me at the time. And my boss was incredible and just said, keep going, keep going. And so I kept going and he taught me a lot and he had his team teach me a lot. And it was there that I really kind of tasted sports for the first time, where I had a sponsorship deal with, at the time, a young race car driver named Dale Earnhardt Jr. And we had great success together on a product relaunch. And he and I and his sister stayed friendly. And eventually I went to Lancome and worked there for a couple of years and had a couple of kids and thought, I'm not sure I want to live in New York City anymore, raising two kids and not feeling entirely passionate about skincare and cosmetics at the, you know, pace at which they wanted me to be as passionate. So I eventually moved down to work for Dale Jr., which is ultimately how I came to Wasserman. And I came to Wasserman in doing a deal with Nationwide and had, you know, created some friendships along the way. And here I've been here for 10 years and it's been everything from working on our accounts to helping us grow as a business, from business development to being lucky enough to open our China office to working alongside many of our agents, you know, in an operational role in our athlete business. So it's been really cool. It's been a really, it's a lovely company to work for. Everybody's so smart. And I feel like I'm still learning every day, which is, you know, what I like to do. So
that's so important. And what a journey, my gosh, that you've been on to get to this point and now leading the collective. Your team has really been championing women's sports and women in sports for years, even though the collective is 2 years old. This is not new to your team. This is true to your team. So can you talk a little bit more? You touched on it, but just dig in a little bit more about the programming that you guys do and the think tank and everything like that. What fills your days up at the collective?
It's a lot of different things. For us, it's everything from building great partnerships. And that might be with some of our brand partners like AT&T, who are incredibly progressive in the gender equity space, to somebody like the Washington Institute or CONCACAF or, you know, RBC, working alongside all these different brands and properties to be able to push gender equity. So we're very thoughtful about those partnerships that we get into. You know, we did launch this think tank with last year, it was 10 schools. It's now 20, and I think we're coming up on 21 or 22. And that has been really such a cool piece of this experience, because when we first launched the collective, I would get a lot of calls like, what are you doing? And tell me more about this. I've never seen such passion as I have seen for gender equity in sports. There are so many people that are interested in helping and kind of being a part of this change, which is really invigorating. And several of those people were professors, candidly, who said, this is what we're doing. This is what I do all day. What do you do all day? And eventually we all kind of sat down and said, do you want to do something together? And so we, you know, decided on the collective think tank. And that has created opportunity for us to continue a series of drumbeats of op-eds out there on all sorts of different topics. We've had different conference panels created and executed with some of these professors. We've had videos shot. We've had white papers created around, you know, the importance of young women consumers. So it's been really, for me personally, really fascinating, because I'm a student of life. And so I like to dive into a lot of the learning piece of gender equity. And I also feel like we cannot move the needle unless we have insights. And there's, as you know, in this space, there are so few insights around gender equity and around women in sports and women as consumers and women as fans. Because we look at women in sports holistically. We don't just look at them as athletes. We look at them also as fans and as consumers and as moms and as, you know, yoga pant wearers or whatever, like the whole bit. And so there's just a real dearth of facts. And so we wanted to go get them. And so as such, we also created a huge repository that we continue to build out and, you know, supplement on a daily basis with, you know, stats and facts that will always drive back to how do we continue to use this information to drive change in ways that are sustainable, that are, you know, really beneficial in the long term for women. It's super exciting. So that's a big piece of what we do all day. We also work alongside a lot of our clients and our brand and property clients in trying to create better programs, better, you know, opportunity to how to measure your intentionality in the gender equity space. And I think that's ultimately part of the issue, Caroline, is that a lot of brands and properties or venues know that they need to change and they want to change and they just don't know how to do it. And it feels somewhat overwhelming. And so our goal is to provide those tools and services in a really simplistic way that helps them do that. So we develop a lot of tools and services. And then the last piece of this is really the community that we were talking about at the beginning of our time together today, which is, you know, we have a think tank and we have a huge community of professional women that we tap into every month and gather together, which is really amazing and special to be able to connect and meet new friends. And then we also have a group of students that now have decided to create a next gen level of this community, which is pretty special as well. So I feel like this thing is continuing to happen organically, which is almost the most special piece of it all.
It's incredibly special. And it's great to see you guys continuing to evolve and kind of grow with the entire women's sports movement. Thayer, you're doing all these things and we are goal sports. So we usually ask people about their goals. So what would you say are the core goals of the collective?
Well, we exist to create change and equity and fairness for women in sports, entertainment, and culture. So that's like the main goal is to not exist anymore so that there's just life is equal. But, you know, really, we want to be able to do that in celebrating women and elevating women. And we find that that comes through, first and foremost, insights as to how to be able to operationalize that. And then again, it's in partnerships. It's in really working alongside incredible other women, businesses, entities, media companies that want to do similar work and elevating those as well. You know, we are one that we've always said, come one, come all. You know, we don't want to be the only agency in this. We want everybody to come to this table and work alongside us and help, you know, push each other up. So I would say our number one goal is to put ourselves out of business in the collective and have gender equity.
I love that. So I'd like to circle back now to this news of the collective marketplace. So your team just put out this really, really exciting announcement. You've launched a new innovative platform called, again, the Collective Marketplace, which is the only online collectible marketplace that is dedicated to women's sports and women's sports memorabilia specifically. So this is huge news for the women's sports world. So I'd love to hear from you directly and hear more about what it is, how it works, and why your team decided to make this happen.
Thanks. We're really excited about this. And I'd like to say a huge shout out to our partner in crime here, Brandon Steiner and Athlete Direct and Collectible Exchange, who are really kind of the back end of this business and the engine that knows how to operate this business. He is a legend in the collectible and memorabilia space. So, and such an advocate for women in sports. And I'd also, you know, really like to give a shout out to, you know, the team that put this together and including Lindsay Colas and Dan Levy, who are agents who have been, you know, working for women in sports for decades and really pushing the envelope for along everything from, you know, equal rights to equal pay to inclusion riders to you name it. But, you know, the reason that this is important is because it's a $15 billion business and, you know, women are not getting the same opportunity. And so we felt a little bit like, well, if no one else will build it, we'll just build it ourselves and provide that opportunity, not only for our own athletes, but for any athlete that wants to, or artist that wants to come to the table. You know, it's really favorable for the athlete in terms of the split percentages. And so it's a good business thing for them, which is exciting. And ultimately, you know, when you're looking at a trading card, like there was a story out not long ago about Mia Hamm's trading card being bid on at $34,000. And oh my gosh, amazing. Well, Mia didn't make any money on that. That wasn't directly to her. So they're trading in her name and other people are trading in their names and making money and not sharing it. And so this was really meant to be able to give more ownership and more direct impact to those women who should be getting it. And besides, so many of these professional athletes have buckets full of their stuff, you know, in their basements or in their closets, and they don't know what to do with them. And some might be held for sentimentality reasons, and others, you know, maybe they could sell them. So it's just another way for them to make incremental revenue and, you know, another place for them to find equal footing with their male counterparts.
It's great that it both puts money directly in the pockets of women athletes and satisfies this need and want of women sports fans to get their hands on these amazing products, items of their favorite athletes.
That's right. And it's, you know, it's a cool way to be able to, you know, clock into, I'm making it up, Sue Bird's shoes from XYZ game or from her, you know, MVP award winning, you know, season. Like, there's all sorts of ways to all of a sudden connect with these women, which is kind of the point. And the point is also to give them direct access back to the fan and to those dollars. And so it's exciting for us to be able to be the nameplate on that. But it's also, I think, in the long term, a really good opportunity for all women athletes to have space on that site.
Absolutely. So is this, just for clarification purposes, this is just physical items, like tangible things that I can hold in my hands? Because I know you guys have done, you had an NFT series, the collective series earlier. So I guess my next question, is this a physical marketplace? And does this at some point tie in to the non-fungible tokens and in the NFT work that you're doing?
Today it's tangible. Tomorrow it will be that and beyond. You know, this we feel like is an establishment of an initial marketplace. So I would look at it as a stall within a bigger marketplace. And we're working already on how do we create a, you know, add-ons that live in a metaverse that really are appealing to all sorts of different collectors. And our NFTs are a part of that, as well as additional, you know, NFTs around other moments to come. You know, there is clearly a new ecosystem being born that we need to lean into on an ongoing basis that, you know, may not be for everybody. And it's also about how do you take those NFTs that we've created and create them into tangible items for those collectors that aren't into creating a non-fungible token, that want something that might be on a t-shirt or on a poster or just on a trading card. And so it has to be a little bit of both. And so we continue to work with Brandon and his team on what that looks like.
That makes a lot of sense. You're laying that groundwork for a lot of great synergies and overlap to come.
Well, that's right. Because, you know, there's, I think, and you've highlighted this on your podcast. I think one of your very first podcasts was about the orange hoodie and, you know, how do you continue to go and look at a market that has just a dearth of stuff for women. Like, there's just isn't, it's not out there. You know, when you're having Tobin Heath and Kristen Press, when they went to Man U, you know, there were reports that they outsold, you know, their all the men top jerseys within 2 days. Like, okay, clearly there's demand. And so while we're today in the collectible and memorabilia business, can we continue to push on the licensed goods, you know, to be able to provide things that fans of all ages want?
Yeah, it's so important. And we have seen data coming back to the insights come out all year long that has talked about how women's sports fans are eager to spend their money and support women's sports. That's, I think, right. It's really smart. And the data proves that it will be successful in the short term and in the long term.
That's right. So we're just taking it one step at a time. You know, we are not a behemoth company today in the collective marketplace. Will we be 10 years from now? Here's to hoping. But you know, today we look at how do we create this opportunity at minimum for these women athletes and then artists to be able to get in on some of the money around, you know, memorabilia and collectibles that they're not in on today.
That's amazing. So it's been live now for a couple hours.
Yeah.
So what has the early response been to everything?
Amazing. I mean, people are honestly, as you know, in this field are usually so supportive. And so, you know, everything so far has just been, you know, how can we help? We're pushing it out on social and everybody's reposting and athletes are excited. We've gotten a bunch of, how do I get in? Stuff like that. So it's exciting.
It's really exciting. I can't wait. Full disclosure, I was shopping a little bit before we started recording today, like, what should I be purchasing for myself?
Perfect. Well, you know, collective marketplace.shop is your link. So go there.
It's excellent. So Thayer, believe it or not, we're coming towards the close of our discussion. But before we get to our final question, is there anything else on the horizon that we should let our listeners know about that's coming up for the collective?
Well, we are, yes, but I don't want to talk too broadly about them yet because I want them to be more fully baked. But we continue to look at how we drive value out of a lot of these partnerships that we're continuing to build. You know, a big passion point for me personally is to be, which is why we intentionally named it The Collective, a place where people come together. And that is, you know, is through our network, through our events, through, you know, the opportunities that we provide for our fans and our athletes alike in the business community. And so going forward, I think you'll see more of that, more opportunities where we're able to pull in people from across the business to help continue to move mountains and make change.
I think that's so important. My mother always says this quote. She said this to us our whole lives, and it is, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. And I think that applies directly to the growth and movement of women's sports.
Agreed.
So Thayer, we've come to our last question, and it's a question that we ask every single guest that comes on the show. And it's, why do you think that it's good business to invest in women's sports?
I think there's a lot of reasons to invest in women's sports. I think from a starting with kids in sports, girls in sports, which leads to, as the Deloitte or Ernst & Young ESPNW survey told us, 94% of all CEO women, you know, C-suiters played competitive sports. So it's important to invest in sports at every level. Sponsor your rec leagues, sponsor your, you know, your young girls' teams, because that matters. Those dollars matter. It helps keep them in sports. It helps keep them, you know, get them to their practices, invest in better, you know, equipment and coaches and all that. I would say that it's important to invest in women in sports because it creates an ecosystem and a different voice for people to hear. And it provides additional content and value as viewers, as fans, as media companies. There is so much business opportunity for women, I would say women in sports and women's sports. As women drive 85% of household spend today and 89% of banking decisions and will own 2/3 of the wealth in this country in the next decade, we better start paying attention to young women and young women consumers because they will own the wealth. And by the way, as sports fans, they're not really paying that much attention. And so we should probably wake up to how should we pivot sports and entertainment to really cater to these new shifting consumers. I could talk for days about this. That said, to invest in women's athletes and women's sports is something that is so long overdue. And as we're seeing time and time again over the past 5 years, increased viewership, increased sponsorship, increased, you know, this starvation of merchandise that there's just not enough to go around for men and for women. Why aren't we spending more? Why aren't we getting into it? Why aren't there more women owners? Like, just keep pressing the gas, Caroline. We'll get there.
I know we will. Thayer, we've come to the end of the show. Thank you so much for the time today. And again, for everything that you and your team do. Your work is felt throughout the entire sports industry. And I know I keep thanking you and keep singing your praises, but that you deserve all this wonderful feedback because what you and your team do is really so important.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Absolutely. Thank you for listening to the Goals Podcast, the business case for women's sports. Leave us a review, check out the show notes, and be sure to follow Goals on Twitter and Instagram for the most up-to-date content on the women's sports industry. And remember, it's simply good business to be in the business of women's sports.